Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I said, this is a metaphor. We don't care what I run or many miles. Okay, it can be impressive, but it's how. It's what is the preparation, what is the food, because we are all marathoner. Everybody, with or without family, businessman or entrepreneur or corporate or whatever, life is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras, and now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, I chat with David Jonacon about some transformational topics such as breathwork, endurance, overcoming limiting beliefs, and the power of the mind. These are topics that I know that you love, especially you right now listening to this podcast. Maybe you're in transit, maybe you're at home, maybe you're doing some breathwork or meditation, but I know that you love these topics. So if you would like not to miss out on any future episode, then make sure that you hit the subscribe button, especially if you're on your iPhone, or the follow button if you're on Spotify, because that does something to the algorithm. I don't know what it is, but it does something that allows more people to get to know about our podcast, right? So hit the subscribe button and make people aware of our show. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, if you have been listening from before, then don't forget to take 2 minutes right now so that you can write us or leave us a rating and review on iTunes, because that makes a huge difference to our efforts of spreading the word and making a positive difference. So write us a review as well. With that being said, let's bring on our special guest for today, David. David Jonacon is passionate about vitality and health and everything that revolves around nutrition, physical, mental, and emotional experience. His professional activity gave him the opportunity to work in Europe, India, and the United States. This allowed him to have rich experiences with other cultures, to develop his leadership style, and to do personal development. And then in 2013, he created a line of natural products, low carb, high nutrients, Almond G, and became the pioneer of sugar-free nutrition and organic in Switzerland. He's also an athlete. As an athlete, he ran long distances, 205 kilometers. You know, some people can say that they have not even traveled 205 in their cars, but this was as an athlete, and he developed his mind, his resilience, and mastered visualization and anchoring techniques. And he also practiced yoga, body weight, and walking and running. Now, in recent years, he has specialized in breathing techniques, pranayama, resistance to cold, visualization, and other healing methods as well. And that is why he is on our show, because these topics are topics that I truly love, practice, and enjoy. But also our listeners, they're very fascinated. I know for a fact that through the surveys, these are some of the most loved and called for topics on our show. Okay, so welcome to the show, David.
Thank you.
Really great to have you on.
Thank you very much for the intro, Aditya. Pleasure to be here to share with you.
Yes, yes, yes. Amazing, amazing. Now, the way that I know David is through Soma Breath. As many of you know, I'm also a Soma Breath instructor. And I just enjoy and love the way David shares, the David explains, David practices, David teaches. And I feel that everything that he does comes from a place of heart, from a place of caring, and from a place of making a difference. Yeah, so I've always wanted to have this long format discussions with you to just learn more about you and your story as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, so David, maybe we can start from the beginning. Where were you born and brought up?
So I grew up in Switzerland. I grew up in Geneva. And for the story, I was the single, the only child, and my both parents were working. So at the age of 3 months old, I was put in another family for the day. And so I have to say, I grew up really rapidly, quickly in the adult's world. And this is one of my many characteristics to adapt myself since a childhood. And if we come really into the deep stuff already, when you grew up into this environment, I realized that many, many years afterwards, I became a pleaser in this world, because I had somehow to be there, to be accepted. And when we go into metaprogramming, to be a pleaser, it's very interesting, because we become a performer, because when we please, we like to perform. And why I'm saying this upfront, because this is really linked with my story, being a pleaser, being sensitive, being into emotion. That guided me into this, you know, this journey to how to master myself. But let's maybe open this to the next chapter.
Wonderful. And how was your, what was your childhood like?
So my childhood was, I had, you know, this chance to be brought up in another family, being the single child, being very spoiled by my parents because they were working. So I grew up with a family with, there were a brother, and in a big family, we were 19 cousins. So,
wow.
So I had the advantage being single, but still I was brought up into, you know, in community, which make a balance, because I would have this, you know, this spoiled child, we'd got everything and we don't have any regards. sorry. I don't mean everybody's like this, but I couldn't end up. So it was really for me easy. We were middle class. We had money, but not that. I mean, funny enough, my father come from a farmer family. One was a butcher, another was a baker, everybody. And my dad was the only one, he was the last of the seven, who studied. And funny enough, he was the less wealthy. We can define what is wealth, but you know, but I was really with entrepreneur in my family, and my father and my mother were statesmen. And there were really big discussion in the family, because there was some political background, and I was always the youngest. My father was the youngest, and the other was really charismatic. There were always debates. So I grew up, you know, in the shadow of my 19 cousins, of all this, but I could observe. But I was really, you know, the little mouse in the background, looking and saying, okay, where do I go? But that was part of the education, to see, you know, some leader and being behind, but still, hey, the little kid in the background. So that's really color my life. And when I grew up, I said, what am I going to do? I mean, I was quite decent at school. And somehow I had this dream to become, you know, an entrepreneur. But I went to the university. I did economics, entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And this is how I grew up. And I grew up as well I like sports to develop myself. I was a bit shabby when I was younger, so I tried to start to train myself, to go into gym. And there is this belief that you are not going to grow up when you do too much weight when you are at younger. You have to imagine it was back in the 80s. So I was in this mm-hmm. building my, you know, my character, but being a bit introverted, being a bit shy, having emotions, but bringing up as, you know, the boy. So to overcome this, and that gives the stage when I come, you know, then into my next steps, because I did the university and then I said, okay, mm-hmm. let's do something else. So I applied for a traineeship, and it was at this time, it's called IASEC, Association International Student in Economics. And I said, marketing, wherever. And all my peers was, okay, let's go to US, let's go to Canada. And
Did you say ISAC? Yes. AISEC? Yeah. Oh, nice. I was also part of that organization for a while.
And I was sent up to India. So I was 23. And it was mm-hmm. the first thing already. I mean, I was not at all into pranayama. I was not at all into yoga. Mm-hmm. But, you know, India, you love it or you hate it, but you cannot be indifferent. And I had the chance to be first in a Christian family, then in a Muslim family, working with Hindus. And for me, India was really a eyes opener, because when you come from this clean Europe, it's not a question you believe or you don't believe, but you've got one God, and really you differentiate yourself with the language in Europe. You know, there are the mm-hmm. German, the Italian. Basically, I grew up French and Swiss, so I've got both mentality. And when you don't know Europe, mm-hmm. there is really, you know, I mean, like everywhere, there is like, mm-hmm. you are Swiss. And even in Swiss, you are Swiss French or Swiss Italian. And in France, you are from Paris, you know, right. like everywhere.
Yeah.
But going into India, there is like at this stage, I think at this time, 23 or 24 spoken languages. But the identification factor was really religion. You know, you mm-hmm. are Muslim and Christian, you are Hinduism, and the caste, even it has been abolished. And I was living in this Muslim family. I didn't see any Caucasian for most of my, you know, stay there. I really live with mm-hmm. India. I eat, and it was just fabulous to see, you know, you are familiar with the reality tunnel, but I was not aware of this, but I mm-hmm. was looking life with other, you know, and with another reality tunnel and understanding, you know, things that you cannot be aware when you are, you know, in your clean Europe and things like that. So for me, I was like, wow, there is something. But I had no idea about yoga. I had no idea about pranayama. I know, you know. But I just work with the opportunity to see these people, to see mm-hmm. the wealth, to see, I mean, I could talk about India, the food for many hours. But that was definitely a pivotal moment into my life to say, okay, the world is not only, you know, your little Switzerland. There is something more about the world and the way of people are thinking.
That is amazing. Firstly, the fact that you had so many cousins, 19 cousins, that's something that I always wanted, you know, growing up, to have a large extended family, to have that many cousins. It does come with the challenges sometimes, because maybe there are more human beings and more beliefs and more opinions. But I think the broader benefit is to be part of a large family, a large group, that it's just so nice to have that level of connection and camaraderie, especially when the family comes together. So that's amazing that you got to experience that, but also had to experience or got to experience your private moments because you were the only child. And the other thing is, I think travel in general does a lot of things for you, because it allows you to push beyond your comfort zone, interact with the rest of the world, come across different human beings, maybe try out different languages as well. And it's fascinating when you learn a different language, you almost become a different personality, right? Because then you speak in a different accent, you react differently. It's crazy, because these days I'm thinking about and my belief, as I've realized is that life happens in cycles, right? So there's a cycle of 7 years, like they say, 7 year itch, seven chakras, right? So I've been in Vancouver for now 8 years, and I'm like, you know, what's next? And I've been thinking about exploring or maybe visiting Mexico to see if that might be a place where I can, you know, spend some time in. And that has gotten me thinking about learning Spanish, which has been on my bucket list for the longest period of time. But true to your point, when you go to a different place, to a different locality, a different city, different town, you meet different people, and that creates neural changes in your brain, right? That influences the way you look at the world around you, but also relates to your own self. So that seems like an amazing adventure that you went on.
Yeah, and the language, you mentioned this, but in Switzerland, I mean, 2/3 of Switzerland are speaking German, or even is Swiss German, you know, is even no high German. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do business in Switzerland, you have to speak German and, of course, English. So before that, I did some stay in Germany and even in UK for 6 months to learn English. And there, obviously, you go outside your comfort zone because you leave home, mm-hmm. mommy and daddy. And yep. It's very, very transformative for you, because you, as you say, you don't understand everything. You have to find ways. You have to, and this is, I think, a beauty living in Switzerland. No, I'm in the Swiss Italian part. My good family, I mean, my family in law are speaking Italian and French, so I do speak. But there is, you know, all these challenge always to communicate, and you get used to it, you know, and it's then when you move, you know, then what to interact, you know, I mean, certain part of the world, I mean, it's very difficult to speak the language, but at least you try to say a couple of words, you know, to communicate, because we have been brought up like this. I mean, and I've been working all my life in a different language, so to speak. I mean, most of my life.
Yeah, I think people are intricately wired to help you, especially if you're making attempts to speak their language, versus you just, you know, speak your own language. But if you try a little bit words here and there, whether it's Spanish or Hindi or whatever language, people see at least he's making an effort. Let me go halfway, right? So that also is something that's human nature, I guess. But when you were in Isaac, which part of India were you in?
So I was in, it was called Madras at this time.
Oh, you were in Madras. Okay.
Basically, I had really a chance, because some of my peers, they were really doing, you know, paperwork. But I had to devise an ad campaign for Easy Cool, Easy Shine, that was to clean the car. So I was doing the marketing campaign, but I was traveling on the scooter in Madras. So I was cover of dust all the day. But then I was working as well for a, what they had, blood gas tester. So basically, there were a couple of things, engineering for foreign company like Vickers. So we had some blood gas testers. So I went to the hospital in India. They were launching an exhaust pipe tester for the lorries. So I went to the Tata factories. So I had really the chance, because I was white, speaking English was like, you know, a representation for the company. So I really saw many, many, many things in India, and I live with India, because this is the other thing. When you travel mm-hmm. and you go to hotel, it's not interacting with people. When you live in the family, when you travel with the people, when you see the custom, this is really you get from the inside. And, you know, they are traveling, you know, picking postcards or really interacting with the people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's brought something for me when I went for my expatriation, then really to connect with the people and not only to mm-hmm. to stay with the expats ghetto, as I call it, and you know, to mix, which is part of the fun.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, for people listening, Isaac is definitely a great experience, especially for, you know, young adults who want to take on some kind of leadership position in different sectors. And I think the biggest thing for me was the exposure to different cultures and people from different countries. Because when I was in Isaac, I was in Pune, and that was the first time I came across people from so many different countries, from Turkey, from Poland, and Amsterdam, Canada, USA, right? And so all these different people coming together to celebrate culture or maybe to do some project. That was really interesting. And different people took on different projects. So you had that level of initiative and defining your own learning curve. But that is something that is highly recommended as well. Now, how did you end up in, was it craft? You were in craft, right? For many years in the food industry. How did you end up there? And what was that experience?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So really, I end up because when I came back, my ex-father-in-law he exceed the speed, and he had his license driving, gone for a month. So okay. I went, it was another part in the Swiss-German part, so I went to work with him and to make mm-hmm. the chauffeur. It was cool. And but basically, I applied to a couple of companies, and at this time already, I was already doing some, relaxation technique and visualization, really basics. And I just applied in a couple of companies, and I sent to Kraft. And within a week, I mean, it was Kraft Foods at this time. That was okay. I don't want to go into all the details of the buying, purchasing from Philip Morris, Kraft Foods, but basically. That was the beginning. Philip Morris bought, Jacob Suchard, Toblerone, for the people who know the chocolate in Switzerland. There are different business, coffee, and so on. So I end up with the new generation. And then I did 20 years across the continents with this company in business units, in plants. I was in finance, but doing corporate finance.
Okay.
I did pension fund as well, because in Switzerland we've got the pension fund. I did cash, I did everything, and I ended up in headquarters. And so I could really grow up into this company. And when I realized, when I came there, I was really sensitive and emotional. I mean, of course, I tried to be the man who is in charge, but each time at the beginning when I had to speak, you know, and the more I went into leading role, I said, oh, that was this parallel when I was learning how to, my skill as a finance guy, But I was mm-hmm. as well very sensitive about my health and about my personal development. So all this year, wow. I was not the guy working from, 7 to 10 behind the desk and doing nothing. So I was doing personal development. And maybe you are going to ask why I was doing personal development. So
yeah, I mean, you can share that.
So because I had this emotion, this anxiety or when I had to speak, because I was working close in finance. When you work in the small business unit like Switzerland, you were working with the CEO, with the mm-hmm. top people, and you had to speak and speak in German. And at least I was sometimes freaking out. And I really tried to decode, to decipher, but why does it come from? Why,
Right.
And I had sometimes when I recall a couple of things that I have to speak, the credit card, and I was completely stressed and I really lost my, I was really, panicky and I didn't get it. And then I was promoted into, I make it quicker because there is my next second aha moment. I was promoted to my first really big director position in a plant. We were doing slices, food, and Lunchables for the US guy. Lunchables mm-hmm. was bring to Europe, and we were doing this. Mm-hmm. And I team up with the director. The director was coming from, he was a blue worker. He started as a blue worker, and he just went up the ladder. And he knew everything about the plant, but nothing about finance. And for me, I knew everything, a lot of about finance, but not a lot of about the plant. And we team up very closely. It was my best relationship. And once I asked him, okay, I'm going to take one day off. I said, well, where do you go? I said, I'm going to do a training. I said, okay, but what kind of training? I said, to work on my voice, on my confidence. And he looked at me and said, but why, you are not confident? I said, no, sometimes. So just mm-hmm. caption here, to tell to your boss that you are not confident was already for me to step out my comfort zone, because my belief was mm-hmm. I need to be, stainless, nothing. And he looked at me, he said, but when you speak in public, I'm looking at you. And I said, why, Laurent? When you speak in public, I'm looking at you. He said, yeah, but I'm freaking out like you, David. So we were two, so to speak, leader, and we are like two child saying, yeah, it's okay to be afraid. And for me, it changed a lot of things because... And then I work on other level. It didn't calm my anxiety because I had to do other things to, and still anxiety is part of the game. But I learned that it's not because you've got emotion that you cannot manage people. It's not because, and this is the time I went into non-violent communication, which helps me a lot. Remember, I'm a pleaser. Mm-hmm. A pleaser, it doesn't like confrontation. Okay, just to give you some background, I was not able to confront the people, but it was for me a lot of energy because this is not my default mode state. I am more a diplomat. I'm putting every people. I'm really good at connecting. And guess what? I had everything in this department because I took somebody should have come on the board. He didn't came. He was below me, and he just make my life hell. And there were a guy from North African. And North African, they are really emotional as well. You are my friend. It's different culture. So I had everything to explode. And everything exploded. But then I was able to come back, to explain, and to use, you can say to the people, I'm afraid, I am anxious. It's not, and that's open for me, other possibility, opportunity. But at this stage, I was still shaking because I was not, so to speak, at my place, because it was like a lot of, you know, going up the ladder, not being aligned with my true self. I start to have a shaking pattern when I was eating, you know, and it just followed me for a lot of years because I tried to push. I was somebody, you know, a performer to push, but I couldn't find, you know, there were anxiety. There was the meta programming. I need to perform. I need to be good. I need to go. So I was into this ocean for a couple of years.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely very relatable. I think a lot of people, irrespective of what their position is, have a lot of anxiety, especially when it comes to public speaking. A lot of studies say that people fear public speaking even more than death, right? And it speaks to, I think, the need for humans to be accepted in society and looked good in front of their peers. Now, I still very clearly remember my own journey of anxiety when it comes to public speaking. I remember this one time, and similar to yours, right? Like speaking in front of my colleagues and maybe doing some presentations or maybe speaking to somebody higher up in the company when I was working at that point, I was sometimes lost at words in terms of how to formulate the right word at the right time to create the right impressions. And I think I was thinking too much. And then this one time I just said, yeah, I got to do something about it. And I just looked up online and I found Toastmasters and I gave a call to Toastmasters. And I started going there, you know, somewhere, somehow. I think that also helped me speaking in front of public, you know, formulating speeches and then working very meticulously to improve my communication. Yes. And also part of starting the podcast was so that I could improve my public speaking because, you know, and maybe I've improved over the years a little bit, but it's still there, you know. And to your point, I think it's very important to be able to communicate well with our colleagues and teams, you know, in an effective manner, tapping into our emotions because emotions can be very powerful. We're also considering where the other person is coming from. So you spent a lot of time at Kraft, right? That 20 years. What made you shift? What made you change careers? What did you maybe not like so much about it that you wanted to change? Was there something like that at all? Or did you just feel that it was the next chapter? What was going on?
No, but
from a purpose standpoint, from, you know, like a career, you know, long-term standpoint.
I would like the free will. I mean, we can talk about free will, but
yeah,
more the way I work into this world is more the events which trigger. So I'm not the guy saying, no, let's stop, let's do it. Again, I'm coming from I'm a diplomat, and I'm very optimistic. This is another thing. So I see always the good thing. And when I went to the States, I was really what we call a high potential because going to the States, so the headquarter, it cost a lot of money. So I was recognized as an IPO. But there were so many organizations. So within 2 years, I was like an IPO to nobody. So I was like losing a bit my mentors as well, because this is something that in Europe when I came from, there is not this mentorship. No, it has changed, obviously, but in the States, they are really into mentorship. Right. You go with the mentor. And I was not really into that at this time. I didn't get it. But hallelujah, I had other mentor to come to this position, but everybody was gone at this time. So basically came the time where I was going up and the company say, you know, you are costing a lot of money. It's time to go home. So this is how I was fired. I had a proposal in Europe. So, you know, like people are the best resource. So I jump from one continent to another continent. I invested, but that was my choice. You know, I'm not playing the victim here. But from one day to another day, I was part of the productivity and was gone. So this is how I end up back in Switzerland. And for 20 years, I wasn't in my hometown. I was parachuted in Geneva because it was where I came from. So I have to reinvent myself there to either to make a shift in my career and to change something. I was like early 40s, so it was time to do something else. But during this time, I started running because remember I was always doing development on the side, doing this thing, and a friend of mine made me discover. Actually, I was back in Switzerland for meetings, and he looked at my watch and said, "Oh, you are a runner." I said, "No, I do run. I'm not a runner because I'm really, if you know me, when I preach something, I really to walk the talk. But this is another belief, you know, but really I have to go into really details and be the master of it, which is another limiting beliefs. But anyway.
So you run, but you're not a runner. So you that identity was not part of you, of being a runner.
Yeah, because I was just, and he said, you should read Slow Burn, the Stu Mittelman. And Stu Mittelman, for the guys who don't know him, was the model of Tony Robbins for the health. And there are a couple of things funny about it, because when I look at the price, to hire my first coach, you know, it was like a couple of thousand US dollars, and even it was less at the end. Oh. But for me, it was a lot of money. And my friend would recommend, because my friend went to Tony Robbins events, and he received this book, and he said, you know, if you want to be coach, if you work with the best, you will gain, you know, so many things. So it's better to pay and to work with the best. So it's what I say to my clients right now as well. and this guy, Stu, finally became my coach. And he was always talking about Tony Robbins. I said, who is Tony Robbins? You know, because being in executive, you've got a lot of coaching. And for me, it was another coach. But then I started to train myself, and this is where came the idea, because the revolution with him, it was an holistic approach. It was not about VMR with all this program. It was about energy. It was about food. And it was about to eat more fat and less sugar. And stay with me, when you grew up in the 70s like me, the best day of your life was you were eating no fat, you know? That was the best. We grew up like this. We have been brainwashed. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, like I said, it's coming more from... And that's why I prefer to speak about, you know, low-carb, high nutrients, because we cannot live on bacon. But, I mean, if we open the food, we have to do another podcast. Yeah. But this is basically when I started to change the way we ate, because I was with my wife. And, you know, she's Swiss Italian, French, we eat, I mean, everything. But we changed the diet and we see it change. And then I start to train, and then I start to go into the ultra running. But it was more for me like a discovery, you know, like a new kingdom. And then you start with 50, then you go to 50 miles, and then you want to go to things. And basically, Stu was my coach, and Stu has been internalized in the Hall of Fame of ultra running. And he was working with another guy called Phil Maffetone, which was really the brain. And now all the new theory about sport, those guys, they were doing this 40 years ago. So this is where I came into the ultra. And this is where I came the idea, because during a year when I came back, I didn't know, I had to reinvent myself. So I keep running, and then I had this idea to launch this company called Almondji, from Almond and Jeet Energy.
That is interesting. I mean, so many things to reflect on here. Firstly, the fact that things are highly volatile right now, right? There's a lot of uncertainty overall around the world. And even when it comes to people's jobs, nothing is certain right now, right? Irrespective of how talented you are, intelligent you are, how much experience you have, you know, sometimes companies can just drop you, you know, just like that. and they don't have to answer to anybody. They just write a letter to everybody in a very nice and polite way, and it's accepted. But I think it speaks to the importance of having like a backup plan, or maybe some additional stream of revenue, or at least some additional knowledge that you can then, you know, go upon if that happens in your life. And I love the fact that you did not have a plan immediately, but at least you focused on your health and you focused on a goal, which was in your case running and getting better and better at it, and having a coach in place who also looked up to and liked Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins is someone that made a huge difference in my own life, like 10 years back when I started listening to Tony Robbins and Les Brown. And I was in a really weird place back in those days, you know, like lost and didn't have any proper goal. But then Tony Robbins, when I started listening to his tapes, which, by the way, I downloaded off of P2P, if you remember, peer-to-peer networks that you had back in those days, I downloaded for free, but I listened to all of his tapes, and that sort of did something within me, and it rewired my brain. And but it's amazing that you went into long-distance running, ultra marathons, which, like you said, around 200 kilometers. How do you even fathom or comprehend running that long? Like, what's it like running a marathon for that distance? Because, you know, when I think of somebody doing a marathon, I'm like, sure, 20 kilometers is still a lot. 50 kilometers is huge, right? But this is like ultra marathon is a different level altogether. What's it like to firstly prepare for such an experience as well as to run? Because it's not just physical, right? A lot of it is mental. Is how do you overcome the temptation of the mind of just quitting? Mm-hmm. And stopping what you did, right? So,
yeah. And then I will tell you that I work with Tony Robbins because ultimately I want to follow the Tony Robbins University back to Europe. Please.
Okay.
But basically, when we ask me, oh, you run, 200 miles or 200 kilometers.
Yeah.
The answer is really simple. You learn to run 1 mile and you repeat over. It seems to be simple, but basically, as you said, this is an holistic game. That means people say it's all in the head. No, it's not all in the head. You are ready to prepare your body. And because I was working with Phil Maffetone, those guys, by the way, people who know Phil Maffetone, he trained Mark Allen, who was 6 times world champion in Hawaii. And he has still, I think, the speed record. And basically, there is the way you eat, the way you train, the way you recover. And I was followed as well by people to look at my health. And they were so amazed about these events. I mean, of course, I won't say when you run such a distance, you are straight. But I had minimum issue because I was trained, I eat the right thing. So basically, Stu bring me all the strategy that he developed during 40 years. And this is really a strategy. So there is different way. When you do such an event, there is different pace. Because
it's a combination of
on the circus, the people, they don't have any strategy.
Sorry, I think I lost you there for a second.
I mean, accepting the best. The people that are running.
Sorry, we lost you for a couple of seconds there. You were talking about why this is all a strategy. If you can continue from there, that would be awesome.
Yeah, this is really, really a strategy. So when you go to a run, when I was going to the run, I had like a checklist. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what I was going to do. Because one learning is the mind may play you tricks when you go into certain zone, into fatigue. So I knew what I was going to eat. I knew when I was going to do my break. I knew everything. And then you just go there. And there are some events when I was preparing visualization with kinetherapist. And basically my kine in Switzerland, when I came for sport, and she said, no, you are not here for sport, you are for business. And this is the one she sent me to Tony Robbins, but this is another story. But basically, when you prepare your mind, And there are different strategies. There is the visualization or going through the event. There is what we call in sport, you can use animals for the flow for different things. You've got your animal totals. So basically,
Like you're visualizing those animals.
And then you bringing these animals into the game. But there are some events I even didn't do any visualization because everything was already in place.
Yeah.
Because you work on what we call the 4C, which is combativity, mm-hmm. Courage, concentration, and always forget one of them. So you make anchoring, triggers. So you train these states, and like Tony Robbins speak mm-hmm. like this, you know, you change in a heartbeat. So this powerful, resourceful state you work. So basically, when you run such a distance, to give you an mm-hmm. idea, when I was training for the events, it was like a 3 month plan. And right. I was walking a lot and running because the game is to be on your feet. So mm-hmm. basically, there was always a warming up, but I was walking like one training was 5 hours, where I was doing, I think, 40 kilometers, and one was 6 hours, and I was doing 50. Each time a week. So I was doing this plus running. But basically, you build this, but doing this, you build as well your mental. When you train, you have enough time to train your mind. So you don't need to do extra session there. And then you put everything mm-hmm. together and you go progressively. You don't go from, 50 to 200 miles. We build a strategy with two to go to what we call a cyclical event or circadian event when you run during 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And there is a story there, but go. I did want to.
No. What I wanted to share was, as you were sharing this, what was coming to my mind is how our ancient ancestors used to thrive and live, right? Because it seems like we are wired and designed to be marathon runners in the sense that our ancestors maybe spend a lot of time running away from predators or running towards prey that they wanted to catch, because if you miss out on that prey once, then it means that you don't eat. You have this famine period, which again speaks to the importance and power of intermittent fasting in eating within cycles, eating within the window. But speaking about running, I read about this one tribe or this group in Mexico that used to, and that still runs barefoot.
Barefoot,
right?
Along
the,
you mean the Tamara, I guess, the
isn't it? Yeah,
they're all with these shoes, these sandal or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And their feet are shaped, very differently, right? Because of so much of running, because of maybe barefoot or almost bare feet, like this thin sliver of leather or some slippers that they do wear. It seems like there are many benefits of running bare feet. And what I wanted to also share was, when you were talking about, running in a marathon, it seems like there's a lot of things that you can bring into your own life, whether it's running a business or being in a relationship, the mindset of being a marathon runner, resilience, not giving up, having the right mindset, having the right approach, preparing for these things. So that's it.
That was exactly my pitch when I launched my company. I said, this is a metaphor. We don't care what I run or many miles. Okay, it can be impressive. Right. But it's how, it's what is the preparation, what is the food, because we are all marathoner. Everybody, with or without family, businessman or entrepreneur or corporate or whatever, life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And this is mm-hmm. what I took from all this, explaining to the people that I did this like a study. And on a long term, I don't think is really smart and healthy to run such distance. And basically, I was doing one event per year, and I was recovering one month. And I can tell you so many stories about the ultra world. Okay, they are always the, you know, the pack, the leaders, but they are people, they've got no strategy, they are running, you know, and they are injured all the time, because this is the other thing, injury.
Which group is this? Sorry, who are you speaking about?
No, I mean, in the ultra world, some people,
in the ultra world,
some people, they are just running from one event to another, and they get injured. Right. They are sick during, they are like farting, they are like throwing, and they think they are the king of the world because they are going there. Of course, they are resilient, but there is another thing called to be smart, and it's to learn to use this technique to your health, like the cold. I can tell you a story about the cold. You know, the more...
That was my next question. Exactly.
Because all, you know, let's come to something really interesting now, where... Mm-hmm. You know, being working for Kraft as a finance, being an ultra runner, being an entrepreneur, and not being a life coach, a summer master trainer, I'm just redecorating my armor. When I was on the dark corporate, the food, the processed food, and now I'm inorganic, and now I am a life coach. But it doesn't tell me about my development, you know. I love this. Bruno told me, one of my coach, redecorating your armor. You are just seeking for the next badge, you know, the next reward, because I'm not enough. It's very more glamorous. Now I'm running, I'm life coach, but I think we're cut. Cut.
Oops, I think we lost you again. We'll just wait for a couple of seconds to have David back. David, we lost you for the last 5 seconds. You were talking about craving and looking for the next badge, if you can start from there.
Yeah. So this is always when I am not enough. Oh, I'm still there? It's okay?
There was some disturbance again. If you can wait for a few seconds, and then you can start whenever you're ready.
So I was saying that... It's always chasing, you know, for the next reward, but you are not changing the story. I just put more, you know, like organic sport. It's more glamorous. But if you are not aware of what you are chasing, what you are doing, if you are not contributing, if it's only for you, it doesn't bring a lot to the party. And we need to realize that the top performer is what I explain when I train my mentee, that the not enough is for the top performer or for people they treat like shit. But this is the same mechanics. Some are more maybe healthy, push you. And you don't need to be ambitious and do things, but you need to be aware to these mechanisms that okay, what is my next? What is my next? What, you know? And
right.
If I go no more deeper, this is more like, stop the, you know, the search. Stop. You were saying, I move away from what I don't like, or I move towards what I like, which is the principle. But the more I know, I realize, the more I say, okay, either you need to be aware of this metaprogramming, because you cannot mend what you don't know. And either you suppress some programs, you upgrade, or you keep, because some of them are still useful. Or you look at the program, or is it working? Or your mind is working, or your attention is working? Because doing all these things, if you don't learn, is for me, this is really what is behind. Becoming an entrepreneur, learning about the people, learning about myself, it was always in parallel with all this stuff. And you come to a point where right now there is some pieces coming all together. I'm not saying I'm enlightened. I don't say I don't have an ego. I love myself. But, you know, this is what it's come when you challenge yourself as well in a smart way or not a smart way. It's as well to see how the mind or the thought is working. And this is where more I am now.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you were talking about the cold. How did... what does the cold do for you? How did you discover the cold? because you were sort of transitioning also between, you know, from long distance ultra marathoning and the impact that cold had on you at a certain point.
So for me, I discovered really the cold with Mr. Wim Hof, who is well known. And you can imagine an ultra runner going into the cold. So I went full blow, and I discovered I had to prove myself again. You know, I had to prove myself. I did parachuting. I did ultra running. You know, you have to prove something. You have to go beyond the limits.
Yeah.
And when I realized, instead of having cold all the day, now I am using the cold as a tool. So the top performer will say cold the morning and hot the evening. And really for me, the best thing, and believe me, I've done many, many things the morning, is a cold shower. It's a reset. This is the best thing, baby. This is the best thing. Really what I learned with this. And now I don't force myself, you know. When I discovered the cold, I was doing all the cold and this so do you call back this back effect when the blood is coming and you're shivering. No, I am using my head. And when I train with the people, I use this as a recovery, as a reset, a reboot. And I love it.
Nice. Yeah, I love the cold as well. And I do daily cold showers in the morning, in the evening when I get a chance. It's fascinating how this works, how the body responds. And warm showers might be comfortable. It might feel relaxing. And I think there's a time and place for warm showers. But the experience that you have coming out of a cold shower cannot be replaced, cannot be replicated, right? Because it's such a triumphant moment of you overcoming the cold, and also physiologically, so many things happening. Cold plunging is something I want to do more of. I've done a couple of them, and that's an amazing experience as well. But I think when the water is moving, like a cold shower, or maybe if you're in an ocean, that's even more difficult, right? Compared to, I think when you're in the stationary water, sometimes your body creates a protective thing to keep you warm as well.
But then this is as well, cold is on the physiology, but as well, there is the metaphor, like, I guess we're going to speak a bit about the breath, maybe not. It's a way to face the fear, you know, it's a metaphor in your life to go beyond and to show you, you know, when you go to Tony Robbins, you walk on the fire, you jump from a, you know, trapeze and you do all this kind of stuff. It's to prove the mind as well that you can do more what you think, because this is the other flip of the coin. You know, I say you have to be smart. But there is this balance by stressing yourself, pushing yourself, and you can believe that you can do more. So this is the thing. And then is to use all this, okay, to the better good. And not to say, how good am I? Yes, I know I am good. But who cares? If you don't bring, if you don't contribute, because this is the next steps.
Yeah, that's definitely something to aspire towards, right? How can you do more good? How can you do more good, not just for yourself, but how can you share the medicine with others so that they can have their own subjective amazing experiences. I forgot what I was going to say. There was something that what I wanted to say was, like you pointed out, the cold is like a testing grounds for you to test your mental resilience and capacity. And when you are in the cold, you can't help but breathing in a certain way, naturally, whether it's stressing, breathing in a stressed out way. And that's where I think breathwork is so important and significant, right? So talk to me about how did you discover breathwork for yourself, and how did it sort of shift you maybe during your first few encounters of breathwork?
Yeah, for me, I was aware that the breath was not the missing link, but the breath is everywhere with the voice, with the emotion, because the first thing to change your state is the breath. So I really had this initiation with Wim Hof. Okay. And I was doing the breath with Wim Hof, always playing the same tunes. And then I discover Soma, Niraj Naik, which is basically a combination of ancient wisdom, which is pranayama, so didn't invent anything,
yeah,
combined with sound therapy, with music and visualization and or meditation. And I did one of the course, the 21-day, and already I've done many, many things. But the way I felt and the connection and only with your breath, I said, oh, I want to explore this. And I explored this in such a depth. Now I am a master trainer. I'm really working with this. And this brought me, you know, all my skills, management, sport, food, exercises with the breath. So to speak, it magnified, you know, my practice. And I put everything together with this.
Okay.
So that was for me the missing links. And now I am really fully aligned because I can use what I've learned. And everything is related, you know, the breath, the speak, the food, everything, the fun. Mm-hmm. And this is how I came to Soma, the science as well, because I'm really open-minded, but as well, I like to have, you know, some facts. And I've been doing food for many years, and I was saying, I know I'm doing breath and life coaching, I'm saying, oh, don't believe me, try, experiment. Mm-hmm. You know, I can give, I can tell you whatever, just experiment. It's like, you know, the cold.
Yeah.
Do your own.
Do you know what your human design is, by the way? Have you gone into human design at all?
Yes, but I don't know mine. I've heard about it, but I didn't. Somebody told me I should be, but I don't recall. No, I didn't do this still or yet.
Okay. Because it's pretty interesting, you know, to just figure out what your human design is. It's an interesting modality, I'd say, that draws from a combination of things like the I Ching and the chakra system and astrology. But what it does is it gives you a human design type. And the way that you're sharing, it seems like I'm a 6-2. I'm known as a projector 6-2. And people who are projectors have certain phases, and they say that the crescendo of your life is going to be when you cross the age of 50, where you then draw from all these different experiences that you've had over your life, the trials and tribulations and the joys and the skills that you've built. And at 50, everything comes together, and then you become the guide to the world. So that's why I was like, I'm curious to see what is your type. Because it'll be interesting to know, like, if whether you're a projector or a manifester or a, you know, generator, right? I'm learning more into it, speaking to people. I did an interview recently, but I was just like, whoa, what is David's human design type?
And that's right. I mean, I will turn 55 and everything is coming to place in my early 50. And, you know, we are talking about the alignment with all, because being an entrepreneur, I had to meet my certain fear to go over and to understand. And sometimes some people said, yeah, but, you know, what the breath did you bring at this stage? And I realized I share something. Even with all, you know, my anxiety and things, I was functioning into the world, okay? I was still performing. But there is a difference to perform into your really your zone, or to push yourself every day, because this is something, when you push yourself every day, you are going to burn out anyway. But what I can see now is with the breath retroactively, I was able to see fears or mechanism that I was not able to see because I was too much fearful, or the metaprogramming was really deep. So now I really start to see at things like, really I had another hard moment in terms of spirituality when I was younger, and a friend was telling me, you know, the heart is undoing, is doing nothing. And for many years, okay, what the shit? I mean, what's doing? Undo the thing.
Right.
And right now I'm touching this with the mindfulness, is looking at meditation, when art is really when you are conscious, you look at the thing, but the art is doing nothing. It's to let it happen, to be conscious. You know, all your thoughts, either you are in the striking zone or you see, okay, am I the thought or am I more than that? And for me, doing nothing was, wow. Like attachment, don't attach yourself. What does it mean? Yeah, when you love somebody, you give the key, you get your inner child, whatever is your metaphor, you give the inner child because you couldn't give it to yourself. And when the guy or the girl is gone, he's gone with the part of you. So all this thing, it doesn't mean I have transmute, but I see so clearly things. Because what I didn't tell you, Aditya, is like when I am going into a subject, I am reading all the books. Okay,
you told me about it. Yeah, you like to specialize.
Yeah, and no, I try to, but I read everything many times, and I was reading all the concept, right. but the thing is not, you know, knowing. But all this all this thing now is coming, and with the breath, and with the pranayama, and as well, you said the age, you know. When I was younger, I was more idealistic, but now with the age, and I think it's something, an advantage when you speak with the people, because they can resonate with you, because you don't sell them nirvana. Right. You sell a life experience, and you know there is upside downs. And I can really more connect with elderly people because people went old, you know, with many things, and things are working or not. So when you get certain age, you've got this balance. It doesn't mean, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean, but life experience is life experience. And this is, I think, something interesting as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. It feels like we, as a society, are confusing between data and knowledge and wisdom. Now, you can have a lot of data, metadata. Data is everywhere on YouTube and Facebook. Just because you have a lot of data doesn't mean you are knowledgeable, which is like the next step. And just because you're knowledgeable, it doesn't mean you're wise. Wise comes from experience, whether it's success or failure, because failure teaches you more than success does because of the reflection that you get to do as a result of failure. And I think what you pointed out was something that is really interesting. I got lost when I was listening to you itself. I was trying to say that Vedanta, which is the foremost spiritual modality coming from India, talks about all these different things, right? Everything is an illusion. The only true thing is consciousness. You know, do not take too seriously your emotions and thoughts, because that is temporary. Whereas the only thing that is permanent is your consciousness, the observer, right? And so Vedanta is very interesting because it says that the best knowledge is direct knowledge, which means that if I tell you this knowledge, then a small percentage of the population will understand it and will embody it, which means that they will know it, maybe from this lifetime or maybe from a previous lifetime. They know it. They're like, sure, all of this is illusion. But most of the population will take time. And that's, I think, why experiences are there, right? Because experiences, whether it's a breakup in a relationship, oh, you lose something, and then you attach so much, then you realize, you know what? Non-attachment is the truth, because you know, the only love that you can find comes from within, right? You're seeking outside for everything that is within, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job or a business, and then your approach changes because you're still doing the same things. You're still pursuing a relationship, you're still doing a business, but you're not attached so much to it. And that's like a whole different ballgame altogether, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I'm really particular because, I mean, I learned all my life to change states. And in breathing, in cold, you change state. And it's really important to function, to be able to change your state in a heartbeat. And I got many, many tools like you, I am sure. But what I tell as well the people is to be aware of the consciousness, because it's, you cannot, if you're repeating always the same, you can change the state, but you are always repeating the same, you know, meta programming and things. So there is still a place for investigation and not to fool yourself. So there is, but life is ambivalent or paradoxal because you need certain program to perform, but like you say, leave your heart on the feet of Buddha and go to the war. I mean, what does it mean, yeah, all this thing? It's no attachment, right. It's all these different level, and there are some misunderstanding, because if you take literally the thing, yeah, sometimes you don't understand, but there is this wisdom, all this metaphor, and you navigate with this. And as you say, wise wisdom, we were always laughing about our grandparents. I mean, sometimes, but the more you get there, you see that because they have seen the life, it doesn't mean they've got all the key. Mm-hmm. But they went through a couple of things, okay? And this is why it's getting interesting now, that with all this knowledge, with all the devices we've got, that's of course, data is not wisdom. That I fully agree. It's not information. I mean, you have to transform this information into knowledge, which was one of the roles in finance, what we say. We take data into information, into action and decision.
Yeah. So from everything that you've learned and come across, in your opinion, what holds a person back when it comes to making a change in their lives, right? So let's say a person wants to change their life. Maybe they want to start a new practice, or maybe they want to do something different in their life. Maybe they want to move to a different city. What tends to hold us back?
So basically, when the more I work, because we can manifest, we can go, you know, but as you said, there is always this thing. Yeah, I want to go to Toronto. I want to do this. And at the end, we freak out.
Right.
We are pulled back, like public speaking, whatever. So yeah. I really believe that there are some program really deep into the subconscious. And just to give you an idea, the latest research shows that the conscious mind is treating 40 information per second, 40. Yeah. The unconscious, 1 million more, 40 million. So if you look at my picture, if there is 40 million pixels, the subconscious is downloading in 1 second the full picture, whereas the conscious mind is seeing only 40 pixels. So it doesn't see everything.
Right.
So we need to get there. Okay. If I am here tonight, it's because I take the action to press and to come here. But then I make a decision before. And before that, I made some thought, okay? And we say we've all been there. If we stay on the thought mode, on the conscious, next time I will be better. And guess what? Next time you're shaking on your next public stage, whatever. So you say, okay, I've got feeling and I've got emotions. All right. So I stay on my emotion. But what we forget is that we've got billion of information for the physiology. So that's why here we come into this game, that if we master our physiology, we can master our reality. If we can master our inner world, we can go into the outer world. And just bear with me. What do you say, David? I say, think just about, we know that if we exhale more than inhale, we can quiet the mind. So if we've got erratic thinking, erratic, monkey mind, and we need to take a decision, it's not going the best decision. But just by changing the physiology, this is one way to quiet the mind, to see the thing as it is, to quiet the emotion. So really one way is, first of all, to be aware of what our limiting beliefs are. What is holding me back? And maybe I'm going to give you a scoop, but the more I work, the more I work with therapists is, I am not enough somewhere. I'm not enough. I cannot do it. I won't be enough.
Yeah.
I would be abandoned, which is the second primary wants. You know, we are talking about public speaking. Why are we so afraid? Do you know why we are so afraid?
Why is it? Is it because historically our survival depended on being part of the tribe? And by looking stupid in front of your public, we are afraid that we might get rejected forever and not be welcomed and be part of the tribe, so to speak.
Yeah. So
and then die as a result and not be able to survive.
Spot on. This is exactly it. But this is so wired. This is so ingrained that to change it. So this is kind of thing. It's, first of all, again, you cannot mend what you are not aware of it. And then when you are aware of it, you can have strategy, working with breath, with hypnotherapy to reprogram yourself, to do baby steps. I mean, then there are different ways. But this is the key. And this is a story we tell us. But this story we tell us, I mean, in the subconscious. This is why it is so powerful. So this is why it's important to look into it, to access into it in terms of relaxation, go into the brain frequency, and to be able to move. And again, there are certain things we need to keep. So I think this is one of the key to, is there free will or not free will? Eastern or West? On West, we think we are mighty, we can do everything. In East, at the extreme, on Buddhism, we are robots. And again, it's not that simple. And I think one way, the yoga, the tantra, is that, no, we are not the mighty God, but we are not robots, so we can still influence. And this is part of Sama, part of breathing, but part of this game.
Yeah, that is such an interesting question, right? And I keep asking this question to my guests all the time to see what their perspective is. Do we really have free will, or is everything predestined? And I like what yoga says, because they say, yeah, you're right. Irrespective of what you say, you're right. Because yes, we do have free will, but not in the sense that we think, because there are so many, like you pointed out, right? We have this meta-programming that is, you know, from our childhood or maybe from past lives as well. That is pushing us down this current reality tunnel. And first, we need to cleanse all of that preconceived notions, limiting beliefs, feeling of low worth. Then, I guess, at a certain point, now we're taking actions. But it is in alignment with what we truly want, or what XYZ person wants us to do. You know, yeah. That's so fascinating that we get to do this. So how did you get into regression? Because that's also part of what you do, right? Is that past life regression?
Yeah, this is more inner child. So this is a technique to revisit the past and to look into the limiting beliefs. So there are some protocol. And regression is one thing, but then you need to upgrade, which is the next part, because going back, you are going to revisit, you are going to help. It's metaphorically, but again, the subconscious is working with symbols, images, and emotions. So basically, you send your older you to help the younger you. So for the guys, you go into a mission, because the guys, they are more mission-oriented, action plan, and I don't put people in the box, but usually it's just a question of wording. But you get back, you see how you're limiting beliefs, and you see that you can know, you grow up and you can upgrade this. So this is an interesting way to navigate into the subconscious and coming back.
Yeah, that is a very interesting concept, right? Because different people have different viewpoints. Some people feel that there is no time. And although our conscious existence is here as a person who is 25, 35, 45, 55 years of age, the person who is 5 years is still existing somewhere, someplace, in some distant quantum realm. And I think the most beautiful thing I did once, or multiple times actually, whenever I'm doing an inner child meditation, is to visualize that your inner child literally in front of you, and you know, just give them a hug or pass on a message of assurance, and it does something to you, right? Even though it's in the mind, or maybe you're connecting with something, it does something to you that then changes you.
Yeah.
In the present.
Yeah, there is a nice meditation where you woke up into your house when you are between 3 to 11, and you go to visit your inner child, and you bring him back where you are. So the upgrade is maybe a bit tech, but it's to reunite, you know, this part that you think you are still the little child, that you cannot pay, you cannot do this. It's to bring him back and to say, you've got the choice, baby. No, change your story. You are not alone. You can enjoy, you can dance, you can, you know. So there is this reunification there. But, mm-hmm. you know, the more I'm talking with my good friends, Riaz Peter in Australia, which is a really good therapist.
Riaz, I'm going to have him on the show. Yeah. We're just trying to figure out the timings.
is my buddy. He's really, really good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the more we talk about what we see is that there is not one size fits all. You have to open the world. And maybe this is going mm-hmm. to work with you, but not maybe with other people, you know? So, mm-hmm. and this is where, you know, the more you work, there is not one therapy, one thing. No, there is many ways. Mm-hmm. And body, you know, you are talking about time and space because we all relate to mm-hmm. space and time, but we are in the process, you know? I may be not the same after this talk, and we are not the same because we are processing new ideas. We are in action, like a relationship. It's not like something, mm-hmm. an object. So it's evolving all the time. So that's why it's so complex, and we are misleading the thing because we project this into space. But we are always moving. We are always changing. And that's another key where, you know, it's not like, okay, push this button and you are going to feel better. It's much more complex. Mm. And I think when we work with people, we need to be really humble because there is not such as knowing the truth.
Yeah, that's so true. I think that's part of being trauma-informed as well, right? Like we can set goals for ourselves. We can set XYZ direction that we want to go, but we don't know what we're dealing with. We have so many conditionings, but also trauma that we all go through. Birthing, being born itself is such a traumatic experience because we're crying and we're shoved into this world with weird oxygen levels, blood all over. It's a weird experience. But then, you know, life itself can be traumatic, like losing a job, having a breakup, you know, business foreclosure, getting rejected on the stage, getting socially canceled. That can be traumatic as well. And so for me, part of what I've learned is not taking life too seriously, but also giving myself time to heal, whether it's 1 week, 1 month, or 1 year, but just also making the small steps towards a transformation and seeing what works and trying different things and not knowing that not one thing might help you, but then, you know, your transformation might just be one step ahead. So keep trying out different things.
And you said something really important is to love and not to be serious. I mean, I've got a mantra. When I'm doing things, I'm really serious about things. But I always say we open the apéro chakra. Apéro is a drink in French. So when we do, you know, a workshop, and at the end I said, okay, no, the apéro chakra is open. Everybody's laughing. Because there are so many, I went to so many retreats and people are dead serious. Mm. It's okay.
Yeah,
sometimes make a laugh because, as you say, we are human being, and so it's all this balance. That's about true. The life, the wise. You know, we come now in society where we don't dare to say some things, and they are right things. I mean, don't I'm not going there, believe me, but sometimes you need to just to make a laugh, and I think this is part of the human being. Yeah. It's we just mm-hmm. make a laugh from, you know, neighbor, but it's okay. It's not going to be traumatic.
Yeah, and I think that's why these awakened elders, you'll see them laughing all the time, right? Because they're laughing for no reason, because they know that everything is an illusion, everything is a joke, and joy is the only gift that we're having to experience. That's it. Just laugh and be merry. Whereas the ones who are learning are like all serious, and I want to prove myself, and I want this person to, you know, have a good impression about me. And, you know, in India growing up, we used to have these parks where you go for a walk at 6 o'clock in the morning, you'll find a group of 30 people laughing out loud. These are like laughter clubs. It's very popular in India. Like, and you start artificially, but then at a certain time, you're literally laughing. That's not only good for health, but then it's building community, right? Laughter clubs. And I think it's now a movement across the world. But it was very popular in India growing up in the 90s. You know, people laughing for no reason at all. Awesome. So something exciting for you. You're having a retreat, right? In Florida. So tell us about that. Yeah, you know, I'm sure our listeners are intrigued to
yeah, know. this is the theme is based on the awakening. This is break free from your past. You know, we were talking right. about this to connect with your breath, your mind, and your soul.
Yeah.
And really, if I could reduce to the max, is really a transformation step. So the first day would be what we call the initiation. Is you take the map, the compass, and where do I want to go? And what are my blocks? Because again, in any transformational journey, you mention it, we need to look what hinders you, why we are pulled back. So this is really the first day to plant a new seed and to cut, you know, all the cuts from the past, or start cutting, because I'm not going to overpromise. This is a journey. And it's all coupled with music, with the breath work, with a Soma technique. The second day is what we call the awakening, is how am I going there? What skills do I need? Because when I go, you know, to A to B, maybe I need to equip my donkey, my horse, so what skill, what means, what values maybe I need to develop? And right. to be successful, but successful in terms of where I want to go, where is my true self? Because it's yeah. not about going into on the moon. It's not going. Is where I want? Oh, I want to feel. Where is my average perfect mm-hmm. day? My average peaceful day. So it's very awakening the body, the soul, and get there. And then it's a transformation. It's to put everything together. And here we use the power of the breath. We use what we call, you know, the Soma, the molecule within, which help us in the process of hypoxia, of control, hyperventilation, to release this dimethylene tryptamine to change the way. It's like the analogy is like this DMT is found in plant medicine. But with the breath, we can recreate this. And the way it works, it's help the neurogenesis to create new neural pathway, but as well to see why there is so many investment right now into this plant medicine, is because we have seen that we can think differently and change. So this is what I am going to do live in Florida for 3 weeks, for 3 days, sorry. And really it will be like dancing, shaking, music, breathing, and use all this. So it's what I'm going to do in November.
Amazing. I took a look at the schedule and it seems very jam-packed. It's pretty intense. It's not just one breathwork session a day and then you know, go for a walk or something. It's like multiple sessions during the day, right? So it's an intense.
It's really a deep immersion, and with the power of the group, you go really deep and fun.
Amazing. And who would you say is the ideal person who should consider learning more about this particular retreat in Florida?
So, I mean, if you really want, you know, to create your own reality, you want to change, but you have still, you don't know exactly where you want to go. You feel like you are living, you know, the life of someone else. And since long time, you've got a calling, but you don't have the gut, you know, to do it. We've got all forgotten, you know, or chilled out dreams, and you're looking to, you know, to realize your life aspiration. Or maybe you are just lacking joy, vitality. And so it's really more, there is not like a hedge. It's more how you feel, and you say, okay, now I want to change something in my life, and I don't know exactly how. So this is meant for this kind of, right. of person. And believe me, I'm doing this online every week, and the results are just I mean, I'm mesmerized each time to see how the people can change with the breath, with this, because we go really deep into the subconscious. This is the thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Action Tribe, I know many of you have reached out to me to inquire when our next retreat is happening. And I'm sort of setting up for that, you know, in terms of letting you know when my next retreat is going to be. But till that time, if you've been planning to go for a retreat and you want to go to a sunny destination and you want to meet people in person and you want to surround yourself with like-minded people, community, and really immerse yourself in multiple practices, including breath work, as well as cold exposure, meditation, all of those things. And like you pointed out, David, yes, there's a lot of talk about plant medicine as well, but I'd say it's not for everybody because you got to be in the right frame. You got to think about set and setting. You got to be with the right person. And it's longer, like 6 hours, 8 hours. Breathwork gives you, I would say, similar or if not better benefits because I've tried both. But you can, you know, get up, recover, and just walk around normally. That's the best part about breathwork. So if you have been wanting to go on this retreat, I would recommend that you consider or at least learn more about this particular retreat because you're going to be in safe hands with David in Florida. I wish I could make it, but this time I can't. But, you know, we've made a link for you. If you want to learn more, go to my7chakras.com/Florida. Florida, Florida. My7 is a word, my7chakras.com/Florida. To learn more. And if you decide, tell them AJ sent you or say that you listened to this on the My Seven Chakras podcast. It'll make a difference to me. I'll feel good about it. David will definitely have this link up in the show notes. My last question as we come to a close for today's session, which by the way has been amazing. Loved chatting with you. What is, according to you, the true nature of reality? Based on everything that you've come across, do you think that this is an illusion? Do you think that we are living in a hologram? Are we living in a different reality and then projecting this? Or do you have some other theory? What do you feel is the true nature of reality as we're living it right now?
So, here we are into a duality with the body and the mind, which is based in religion, the way we see. Yeah. And either you can think it's only in the mind, or you can in the body, mm-hmm. or you are more a scientific way.
Right.
What I'm really believing is everything, the power of the thought, everything is in your consciousness. Everything is projected there. It could be the sound. Mm-hmm. It could be the mood, a thought, whatever. So I think the only thing I believe right now that everything is created from there, and there it's not exactly the head; it's the consciousness. And this is the only thing. I think the reality is there. If it's mind and body, I don't know. But one thing is, we cannot debate about the consciousness. No, it's whatever arises. There is this. Then we can go into the observer, the thinker, all this thing. But I think this is, for me, the reality. And the more I think, you know, I come back to this, undo the thing, stop searching. The more you undo, the more you realize that you everything is created there. So this is, for me, either you look at the nature of reality or you are lost in thought. And we know how to be lost in thought because we practice since many years. So this is the only thing today I'm come across. And there are some relief when you've got the glimpse, because again, whatever on Nirvana and lighter than I would like when even I don't care. But the more I see, I see that like this, this is undo, step back, look, and just look at the power of the thoughts. But what I know is I am not the thought. So this is my conclusion.
Amazing. How can somebody listening to this show learn more about you?
So basically my site is bylittleseed.com. So this is where you can find me, or you can find me via Sama as well at david@samabref.com.
Amazing. Everyone, please give a round of sound to David. Really enjoyed this experience chatting with David, learning about his stories. We've known each other for now a couple of years, but this was an opportunity for me to learn more about you, a nuanced conversation about everything about your life. And I'm sure there's more to learn as well, which in the future may be an in-person discussion. But Action Tribe, if you like this episode, then take a few minutes to write us an iTunes rating and review. Or if you're on Spotify, make sure that you rate our podcast so that you can get more people to know about us. I know some of you have been listening for years, but if there's one thing you can do today, write us an iTunes rating and review. As next steps, if you'd like to experience the power of breath and feel deeply blissed out, then come join me for a breathwork journey. I'm a Soma breathwork instructor as well. Go to my7chakras.com/drop-in. my7chakras.com/drop-in. If this is your first time, use code HEAL2022 to get it for free. HEAL2022. If you're on Instagram, take a screenshot of this episode and tag me as well as David. David, you're on Instagram as well, right? Or you're not that active on Instagram?
Yes, I'm not that active on Instagram.
Okay. So then for now, you can just tag me. My handle is @my7chakras. @my7chakras, and you just share, you know, send a DM, comment, let's engage, let's connect. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. David, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about the power and promise of endurance and breathwork and cold showers, as well as the power of the mind, and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
It was my pleasure and my honor. Thank you so much to be your guest.
Okay, we'll just stop there.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my seven chakras.com.